ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय ॐ नमो भगवते वासुदेवाय Srimad Bhagavatam, translation and commentary by His Divine Grace, A.C. Bhaktivedanta Swami Prabhupada, Canto 5, Chapter 19, Text 4. Yat tad vishuddhanu bhava matram ekam. Svatejasadhastagunavyavastham Pratyak prashantam sudhiyo palambharam Yanam rupam niraham prapadye Yat tat vishuddhanu bhava matram ekam Svatejasadhasta guna vyavastham Pratyak prashantam sudhiyo palambhanam Yanam rupam niraham prapadye Verse translation. The Lord, whose pure form, Satchit Ananda Vigraha, is uncontaminated by the modes of material nature, can be perceived by pure consciousness. In the Vedanta, he is described as being one without a second. Because of his spiritual potency, he is untouched by the contamination of material nature. And because he is not subjected to material vision, he is known as transcendental. He has no material activities, nor has he a material form or name. Only in pure consciousness, Krishna consciousness, can one perceive the transcendental form of the Lord. Let me be firmly fixed at the lotus feet of Lord Ramachandra, and let us offer our respectful obeisances unto those transcendental lotus feet. Purport. The Supreme Personality of Godhead, Krishna, appears in various expansions as stated in the Brahma Sanhita. Ramadi Muritishu Kalani Amena Tishtan Nanavataramakarod Bhuvaneshu Kintu Krishna Swayam Samabhavat Paramahpumanyo Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the Supreme Personality of Godhead, Govinda, who is always situated in various incarnations such as Rama, Narasimha, and many sub-incarnations as well, but who is the original Personality of Godhead known as Krishna, and who incarnates personally also. That's the end of that verse translation. Srila Prabhupada continues. Krishna, who is Vishnu Tattva, has expanded himself in many Vishnu forms, of which Lord Ramachandra is one. We know that the Vishnu Tattva is carried by the transcendental bird Garuda and is equipped with different types of weapons in four hands. Therefore, we may doubt whether Lord Ramachandra could be in the same category, since he was carried by Hanuman, not by Garuda, and had neither four hands nor the Shankha Chakra Gada and Padma. Consequently, this verse clarifies that Ramachandra is as good as Krishna, Ramadi Murtishu Kala. Although Krishna is the original Supreme Personality of Godhead, Ramachandra is not different from him. Ramachandra is unaffected by the modes of material nature, and therefore he is prashanta, never disturbed by these modes. Unless one is saturated with love for the Supreme Personality of Godhead, one cannot appreciate the transcendental value of Lord Ramachandra. One cannot see him with material eyes. Because demons like Ravana have no spiritual vision, they consider Lord Ramachandra an ordinary Kshatriya king. Ravana therefore attempted to kidnap Lord Ramachandra's eternal consort, Sita Devi. Actually, however, Ravana could not carry off Sita Devi in her original form. As soon as she was touched by Ravana's hands, she gave him a material form, but she maintained her original form beyond his vision. Therefore, in this verse, the words Pratyak Prashantam indicate that Lord Ramachandra and his potency, the goddess Sita, keep themselves aloof from the influence of the material energy. In the Upanishads, it is said, Yam Aivasha Vrinute Tena Labhyaha. The Supreme Lord, Paramatma, the Personality of Godhead, can be seen or perceived only by persons who are saturated with devotional service, as stated in the Brahma Samhita. Primanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochanena Santah Sadaiva Hridayeshu Vilokayanti Yang Shyama Sundaram Achintya Guna Swarupam Govindamadi Purusham Tamaham Bhajami. I worship the primeval Lord, Govinda, who is always seen by the devotee whose eyes are anointed with the pulp of love. He is seen in his eternal form of Shyama Sundara, situated within the heart of the devotee. End of that verse translation. Similarly, in the Chandogya Upanishad, it is stated, Etas Tisro Devata Anena Jivena. In this verse of the Chandogya Upanishad, the word Anena is used to distinguish the Atma and Paramatma as two separate identities. The words Tisro Devata indicate that the body of the living entity is made of three material elements, fire, earth, and water. Although the Paramatma enters the heart of the Jivatma, who is influenced and designated by a material body, the Paramatma has nothing to do with the Jivatma's body. Because the Paramatma has no material connections, he is described here as Anama Rupam Niraham. The Paramatma has no material identity, whereas the Jivatma does. The Jivatma may introduce himself as an Indian, American, German, and so on, but the Paramatma has no such material designations, and therefore he has no material name. The Jivatma is different from his name, but the Paramatma is not. His name and he himself are one and the same. This is the meaning of Niraham, which means without material designations. This word cannot possibly be twisted to mean that the Paramatma has no ahankar, no I-ness or identity. He has his transcendental identity as the Supreme. This is the explanation given by Srila Jiva Goswami. According to another interpretation given by Vishwanath Chakravarti Thakur, Niraham means Nirnischayena Aham. Niraham does not mean that the Supreme Lord has no identity. Rather, the stress given by the word Aham proves strongly that he does have his personal identity, because nir not only means negative, but also means strong ascertainment. Impersonalists get excited about words like anama, rupam, niraham. They feel the transcendental bliss of impersonal oneness welling up in their heart at such descriptions. Anama, no name, no form. Niraham, no I-ness, no identity. This is The literal meaning of such words and impersonalists, they may say that, well, you say you're talking about as it is, Bhagavad Gita as it is, but if you really want to say it as it is, it says right here, anama, no name. So if you want to have it as it is, it means no name. So there you go, as it is, no name. God has no name. For those of us who took birth in the Western world, in non-Indian families, a name doesn't really mean much, usually. It's just, you have to give a name, some name. So you call a boy John or David. I guess some people might connect David to David of biblical fame and John to John of biblical fame. But mostly it's just a name. A rose would smell as sweet by any other name, said William. He had the name William. Originally all these names had some meaning, but nowadays, apart from a few people, very few people who take interest in such things, what the name means, it's not thought that a name means anything. You just have to give a name, some name, to someone. You have to give them a name. It's better than a number. But in Indian culture, names, they have meanings, at least in Hindu culture or Vedic culture. They have means, and although often people are known more by their nicknames like Rinku, Tinku, which have no real meaning, but a name like Madhava, often people even with the name won't know what it means, but they know it means Krishna. And names like Kasbu, which is not Sanskrit, but everyone knows what it means. It means a good scent. Or Deepak means a lamp. Or the Urdu equivalent Chirag means a lamp. So names have meanings. And sometimes when I give a devotee a name in initiation, they ask, what does it mean? Because they presume that the name has a meaning. And it's sometimes surprising how they don't know. I think, well, they should know. Should know what that means. But name has a meaning, which means that it's connected with the qualities or activities of the person, or they're named after someone who has such qualities or activities. One factor in choosing a name can be, after looking at the astrological chart, to give a name in concordance with the qualities which are expected to be manifest in the person. So we find that Nilamba Chakravarti, who was the maternal grandfather of the second son of Jagannath Mishra, by seeing the qualities which were expected to develop in this baby, he gave the name Vishvamma, which means he who is the maintainer of all the worlds. So any child may be called, male child can be called Vishvamma. But actually Chaitanya Mahaprabhu is Vishvamma, the Supreme Personality of Godhead. He's directly having. Then he was also given the name Nimai, which is more of like a nickname, because he was born under the neem tree, and that name is expected to protect him, because bad spirits are not, they're supposed to not come near neem trees. The fear was there that just like so many children born before that he may be taken away. So the name was given according to the qualities. Something which doesn't have qualities then can be called anama, which means no name. But anama is also a name, because it's describing the quality of having no qualities. So actually there's no such thing which is fully anama. If you can conceive of something in any way, then you're giving a description to it. Even if you say vacuum, it means that it's an absence of anything else. So to say that Krishna is anama rupam, Srila Prabhupada translates this as without a material name and form, and the Mayavadis will say that, well, you're just pushing in your philosophy here. It doesn't say that. It says no name and no form. Well, you can discuss the whole Mayavad philosophy inside out and upside down, but it doesn't make any sense. Anyway, it's almost, if it wasn't so influential, it would be a waste of time even to discuss it. It doesn't make any sense at all. Just everything is one. All is one. It doesn't make any sense. Then you spoke, I heard. But they say the speaker, the hearer, and the sound are all the same. So, sense, does it make any sense? Well, I can suggest to such people, well, if it's all one, then instead of eating rice and dal, you eat processed rice and dal, stew. If it's all one, all the same, so it doesn't make any sense. So, when it's stated anama rupam, we have to see the whole context. This is given, this whole shastra is given by Vyasadeva, who ultimately establishes in this Srimad Bhagavatam, Vedyam Vastavam Atravastu. This is the actual object of knowledge in the Vedas, wherein he establishes Janmadhyasya Yataha. From the very beginning, in this verse, Srila Prabhupada brings in the word Vedanta in his translation. So immediately he begins the exposition of Srimad Bhagavatam with the same words that he used in opening his Vedanta Sutras. Of course, Srimad Bhagavatam is eternal, and Brahma Sutras are manifest by Vyasadeva. They're his own, it's said to be his own writing. He collected, edited the eternal Shastra, but he also wrote the Brahma Sutras and the Mahabharata. So Janmadhyasyataha, that from which everything emanates, that in which everything exists, that into which everything enters, that tadbrahmeti, that is the Brahma, that is the subject, Brahma Sutras, the subject is Brahma, the eternal reality. So that is the first description which he gives at the beginning of the Vedanta Sutra, and then he establishes within the Bhagavatam, which is his own commentary on the Brahma Sutras, that Krishna is that Brahma. And in the very first verse, Om Namo Bhagavate Vasudevaya Janmadhyasyata Satyam Param Dhimahi. So in the very first verse, he describes so many of the symptoms by which the Supreme Personality of Godhead is to be understood. Names means to describe qualities, so we have names such as Shyamasundara. He has the quality, his bodily form has the quality of being Shyama, blackish, and Sundara, beautiful. His activities by which he be Vrajabihari, he sports in the land of Vrindavan. His devotees in association, in connection with his devotees, Gopi Janna Vallabha, Yashoda Nandana. So they describe his names, forms, qualities, and past. Yeah, some of his names describe his names also. Sahasranama is one of the names of the Supreme Lord. He has 1,000 names, or it can mean he who is described in the Vishnu, who is the subject of the Vishnu Sahasranama. So it's important to understand this, that name automatically relates with qualities, and it is by qualities that one object or person or concept is differentiated from others. Differentiation. That means not one. Differentiation is there. So Krishna is described by specific qualities, and those qualities may manifest in others, persons also. Someone else could be described as Shyama Sundara, for instance. They may also have a black form and beautiful. Mahavir is the name of the Supreme Lord, the great hero, Ramachandra. But Mahavir is also known to be a name of Hanuman, who's speaking this verse that we're reading today. He's also a great hero. So there are many names which can be applied to Krishna and to others also. But there are some names which only apply to Krishna, such as Radhanath. Of course, someone may marry someone called Radha and call himself Radhanath, but not exactly. So many qualities of Krishna are described, and all qualities only exist in Krishna, which means that there are contradictory qualities in Krishna also, apparently contradictory. Just like Krishna, one name of Rama, who is being described here, Ravanari, he's the enemy of Ravana. And here in this verse, he's described as Prashanta. So how are you going to be very, very peaceful and be an enemy also? But he's both. All contradictions. This is a great mystery of Krishna, which adds so much delight to hearing about him. This Kunti Rani, she prays. What is that? Gopyada Day. Who knows the verse? He's running in fear from Yashoda. Gopyada Day? Kritagasi. No, I can't remember that. I didn't prepare the class. I should have. Anyway, I didn't. But anyway, the point is that there are so many instances of apparent contradictions. Krishna is afraid of Mother Yashoda and is running from him, even though fear personified is afraid of Krishna. Krishna is controlling all the worlds, and the little baby Krishna, when the elderly gopis are clapping their hands, he's dancing like a puppet. So this is everything is there in Krishna. He's the bigger, anaraniyan mahato mahiyan, he's smaller than the smallest, bigger than the biggest. All qualities describe him. But still he is anama, arupa, nirguna. What does this mean? He has no material qualities. There's no foolishness. Or we should say no material foolishness. We could also If we say that this is a problem of speculative theologians, Christians, for instance, that well, there can be no evil in God, then how is there evil in the world? How is it possible? Everything comes from God, He creates everything. Then how is there evil in the world? That's a big problem for them. But we can also say that this has to be understood very carefully. And it's not something that we would go in public and preach, but we can also say that Krishna is the supreme foolish. He's the Lord and Master of everything, but He's crawling on His hands and knees, begging for the mercy of some village girl who's not even His, she's married to someone else. So, one has to be on a very high level to actually think that Krishna is foolish, or on a very low level. Cheetah, Srila Prabhupada often, he said, yes, Krishna is the supreme cheetah. When some devotees, Srila Prabhupada brought so many Western devotees to India, and one of them complained, oh, I don't like India, they're always cheating us. And Prabhupada said, yes, well, I'm also an Indian. And they said, well, you don't cheat. And Prabhupada said, I cheated you? You were living comfortably in America with so much money. I'm bringing you here. You're giving your whole life. I don't give you anything. Krishna is the supreme cheetah. Hari means thief. He's the supreme thief. People warn. You don't be afraid of that Hare Krishna movement. They'll take away all your desires to have a good career and a good job, and you'd be wandering around Vrindavan without even any shoes on. All words can describe Krishna. All words are ultimately meant for describing Krishna. But it's the material conception of them by which we are bewildered. Even if one has a material conception, even if he directly approaches Krishna, he cannot understand Krishna. Srila Prabhupada states here that Ravana could not see Sita. He could not see Rama. He could not see Rama. Well, in one sense he saw Rama, but in another sense, he never saw him at all, because he didn't see him with Premanjana Churita Bhakti Vilochan. He didn't see with eyes saturated with love. So he didn't see Rama. He didn't see, here is the Supreme Personality of Godhead who I should bow down to and surrender to. He saw, this is my enemy. He has come to, his objective is to stop my enjoyment of this world. So he sees Rama as an enemy. So he doesn't really see Ram. He sees something. Seeing, if we say seeing in the sense of some light impression goes on the retina and gets turned upside down and goes to the back of your brain, and then it registers, I see a pillar. I see Rama. I see the deity. But seeing, actual seeing, is possible by Premanjana Churita Bhakti Viloch. Otherwise, we'll see Krishna, no form. Even the form of Krishna is so kind, he personally comes to this world and exhibits his pastimes. And then again he comes in the Archa Vigraha, the form to be worshipped. Deity form. So people will come and they will have some impression on their eyes. And to the extent that they associate with devotees or who can teach them that pratima nahatum, Sakshat Brajendrananda, who will teach them that this is not a statue, this is directly Krishna. To the extent that they accept that, they can begin to see Krishna. But others will see, they'll see a statue. Here is a statue. They'll see a material form. They say God has no form. He comes in, he appears in his very form, and still they'll say no form. So all these words are to be understood very carefully. Even names are given of Krishna just here. Prashanta, it's a description of his qualities, but it's also a name, because every description of Krishna's qualities is also a name. That's why there are unlimited names. That's why the acharyas in their writings, they'll give so many names. You might not be able to find in any shastra such a particular name, but it's a name. It's a quality of Krishna which the acharya has perceived, and he gives the name. And there are so many shlokas and stutis and stavas. And new names may be given in Chaitanya Mahaprabhu's pastimes. Bhaktivinoda Thakur, so many names he has given of Krishna, Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, we don't see elsewhere. Gadadhara Madana, for instance, is one name he gives to Chaitanya Mahaprabhu, he who makes mad, you could say, enlivens Gadadhara. Then we have in Chaitanya Charitamrita also this Vasudeva Trata, something like this. The leper Vasudeva was delivered by Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. So Srila Prabhupada also gave some new names to Krishna. New, well, Krishna's eternal, but his qualities are always expanding. So no one ever thought of giving a name such as London Ishvara to Krishna. But Prabhupada installed it, did Radha London Ishvara. For that matter, I doubt if anyone had ever given the name Radha Parthasarathi. Prabhupada gave the name Parthasarathi. Radha Parthasarathi is a very well-known name, but no one had given the name Radha Parthasarathi. So when Srila Prabhupada was asked about this by Achyutananda, Prabhupada, he said, yeah, because Krishna, wherever he is, his internal potency is always with him. So we can understand from this statement of Srila Prabhupada that this may be a very confidential subject matter, but even in the Bhagavad Gita, speaking Krishna in Kurukshetra, then Radha is also present. This may be a subject of some controversy. So it's not that Krishna has no name, but all names. Rather, we may say anama means all names, but he cannot be understood by any name, by someone who himself is in the consciousness of this nama, this rupa is aham. Here we have anama, rupam, niraham. Krishna is without the sense of I-ness. So one who has misplaced his sense of I-ness, I am this name and this form, they can never understand Krishna, because Krishna is beyond this mundane I-ness. Krishna is the one I. Here I'm talking about letter I, meaning the word I, aham, who gives sense of identity to everyone. Eko bahu syam, one became many. But for those who don't want to recognize Krishna, they adopt a different sense of I-ness, and they define everything in terms of mundane names, forms, and qualities. Therefore, they cannot appreciate Krishna. There's no doubt that Hanuman, he's not talking Mayavad philosophy here. There's no question of Mayavad philosophy coming from the mouth of Hanuman. He is a pure devotee. But he says that a pure devotee, he's maybe the most famous of all pure devotees. I don't know if any surveys were taken, but Hanuman is probably the most famous among all pure devotees. Although not everyone who knows about Hanuman know about this terminology, pure devotee. They know he's a devotee of Rama, but they don't know the science, Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam, the science of knowledge of God. They know he's a devotee. They know he's a great devotee, but they don't, these terms, pure devotee, they don't know what these terms are. Hanuman, yeah, he's the most famous and an eternal devotee of Lord Rama. So when he's saying Anama, Rupam, Niraham, it's not that there's no question of him being influenced by or having lapsing into some Mayavad philosophy. When he says this, he has a specific purpose. He knows what he's saying. He's very clear what he's saying. It's only us that may misinterpret or misunderstand. Therefore, we have to hear Bhagavatam through the acharyas who will explain all these points very clearly. Acharya means they should first of all understand themselves what is the actual point, what is the actual message of Shastra. It's so valuable, this Shastra. There's no comparison with this Srimad Bhagavatam. There are so many books which are available, but there's no comparison to this Srimad Bhagavatam. This is the full delineation of the science of God. Bhagavat Tattva Vijnanam Mukta Sangha Sajayate. By which the first result is that by becoming imbued with this science of Godness, that one becomes freed from material association, material contamination, and in that purified state one can begin to understand Bhagavatam. So 1976, I was sitting just about, I don't know, there's one Mataji, I don't know her name, with the, yeah, yourself. I was sitting approximately in that position, and Srila Prabhupada was sitting in this position, and in his lecture he said, you should make Srimad Bhagavatam your life. So that's Hare Krishna. That's one thing that really struck me and has continued to strike me, how we should make Srimad. Definitely Srimad Bhagavatam was Prabhupada's life. I mean, literally, he gave hours, how many thousands of hours did Prabhupada put into translating this? What to speak of getting it published and giving the, how the book should be designed and made up and the pictures for them and then distributing them. And he lived to give this message of Bhagavatam to others. That's what he brought. He brought Bhagavatam to America. When he had the Bhagavatam, he thought he was ready to go. He didn't have money, he didn't have followers. He had a sponsorship, which he got, and then with difficulty he got a free passage on a freight ship. But he had his Bhagavatams, and even though imperfectly composed from the literary point of view, he was ready to go with that. So Bhagavatam, our life, means we tachinvan supatam vicharanaparo, to hear, read, study very carefully, and to consider very carefully, apply our intelligence, and to live by that. Srila Prabhupada is the living Bhagavatam who has given us this. Otherwise, how is it possible that people all over the world could become interested in some, what seemed just like some ancient Indian sectarian book, which even the Indians themselves are not very interested in, most of them. So make this our life. Read, live according to, meditate on the subject, distribute, teach others. To understand this, we have to understand through the acharyas, and particularly Srila Prabhupada has made these confidential truths of Bhagavatam available to us. Otherwise, the same thing if we hear from Mayavadis, they'll become very happy. Ah, anama, you see, all this description of bhakti, but ultimately it's all anama, rupam, niraham. They take it out of perspective. Hare Krishna. So, there are a few minutes, if anyone would like to ask any question. You're ready with a question? All right. In consideration of seniority, even though I saw your hand first, I'll Sankarshan Prabhu. Microphone, please. Or you can say, and I'll repeat it. And in the meantime, the microphone. Maybe. No, please say it. Please say your question, I'll repeat it. Question or comment or whatever. Oh, I see. Well, I tell you what, I'll take the other question first. Yeah, please say your question. Oh, you also need the mic. Okay. All right, the mic came. So. Once I was here also, Jayadvaita Swami was giving a class. Okay.
According to the Chaitanya Mahaprabhu Sampradaya, they keep themselves clean shaven, and only single instances there of Dvaita Prabhu, he had his beard. And Chaitanya Mahaprabhu never asked him to cleanse because one reason is that the Dvaita Prabhu was just contemporary with his father, so he did not like to dictate, but otherwise all his disciples, they were clean shaved. So my question is, I'm seeing there's a growing tendency in this kind of
growing
and not shaved. Why this is happening in this kind of so many devotees are having a beard, even though Chaitanya's standard and Prabhupada's standard is clean shaven.
When did I last shave? Didn't shave this morning. Or the day before. Whoops. Why? Well, I guess you can ask the people who are growing long hairs why.
I asked one. He said, well, it's Vedic. He says, having a beard is Vedic.
Yeah. That. Actually, we see in all the old pictures, just like this, the drawing was done of Rupa Goswami. We have that drawing of him that was made directly by seeing him. We also have extant drawings of Prabhu Troy, that means Srinivas Shamananda Narottam, but we never see them with beards, even though presumably according to the Vedic system they would shave every month because, well, that was the system for those who shaved. It wasn't so easy in those days. There was no running water and safety razors and Gillette shave foam, and you shave yourself. The barber would be on contract to come around the village and shave everyone once a month, usually on a particular day. So yeah, it is Vedic. Srila Prabhupada, for preaching, I presume, he wanted his disciples, male disciples, of course, to appear clean-shaven because that was considered respectable. On the occasion of the opening of the Radha Madan Mohan Temple in Hyderabad on Janmashtami in 1976 or 5, who knows? Dasu goes, he knows, he was there. I don't know exactly. Anyway, Jashodanandan Swami and who else? And another Swami, maybe Gargamuni were present. And they were doing Chaturmasya. And Prabhupada they had beards, and Prabhupada said he admonished them for looking so scruffy on such an important occasion. So he told them to go. And here in Vrindavan also, there's the incident of several devotees were having beards, and Prabhupada said, "This is hippie seeds growing again." And so they went and shaved, even though it was a Kaddishi. But actually, if this was the biggest problem in ISKCON today, I'd be very happy. The hippie seeds may be growing in other ways also. I think for farms, if devotees are living on farms, it may not be such a big thing. Or if they're not going out and preaching, it may not be such a big thing. For those, Srila Prabhupada wanted that his disciples be seen as respectable people, especially those who are out preaching in the world. So that's a consideration. That's my reply. You might have got a different reply from someone else, but it's not complete. But anyway, please pass the mic over.
Can you please tell the difference between the difference between goodness and pure goodness?
Difference between goodness and pure goodness.
If I understood correctly, the Madhava or the Ramanuja Sampradaya, devotees have understanding that goodness is prerequisite.
Yeah.
At its perfection. But on the other hand, we also hear about the human rising in the heart of anyone. And it's the Lord's prerogative to favor anyone regardless of the person's quality.
Well, that's one branch of the Ramanuja Sampradaya says that. There are two branches, and they don't both say the same thing in this regard. It's better to stick to one Sampradaya, otherwise you'll get confused. There's no real need for us to get into a big discussion with the Ramanuja Sampradaya on the nature of goodness. They're worshipping Krishna, or Vishnu more like, we're also worshipping. And there's no real need for us to get into discussing all these very intricate points of what is the meaning of sattva guna. They're doing it in their way, we're doing it in our way. We follow our acharyas, they follow their acharyas. So, yeah, that's my answer to this. There's no need for us to get into a big argument with them over what is the actual meaning of sattva and Vishuddha sattva. It's not necessary. We have much more important work with the Mayavadis and atheists. And if we're going to argue, let's argue with them. They're worshipping Krishna. Great, wonderful. Let's encourage them to do that and not argue with them over some points which ultimately doesn't make that much difference. It's a technical point. Of course, some people may say it does make a lot of difference, but I don't think so. Again, as you asked me, I'm giving the reply. So difference between sattva and shuddha sattva, according to Gaurya Vaishnava Siddhanta, is that sattva guna is one of the modes of material nature. Tribhir gunamaya bhavair mohitam. What is that? Tribhir gunamaya bhava mohitam savam jagat. Yeah. So the whole world is bewildered by the three modes, Krishna says. Mangchiovya bicharenas, bhakti yogena sevate, sagunan samatityaita. So goodness is included in the three modes of material nature, if we take Bhagavad Gita as it is. But there is a state, sattvam vishuddham, Vasudeva Shabditam. The position of sattva, which is completely pure, is known as Vasudeva. So this is how we understand it. And then the Ramana Sampradaya, they may interpret it in another way. But I advise you not to be too much bothered by all these things, unless you're going to do it as a very specialized service, which isn't even the most important thing for anyone at this time, to compare the Ramanuja philosophy or the two Ramanuja philosophies with the Gaudiya philosophy. Even we say Gaudiya philosophies, there are different interpretations within that. And all saying bhakti, the term bhakti yoga, they have a completely different understanding of what we understand to be bhakti yoga. And the for them, prapatti is the ultimate goal, and for us it's prem. So there's no need to get into all this. Let them be as they are, we'll be as they are. We can offer them respects. No need to fight with them over these things.
Elucidating class. This question may be seen as maybe being controversial, but my intention isn't to evoke some kind of controversy. But it's just a question in my mind because it's been brought up, I've heard it from a few different sources. And I'm wondering if you happen to know whether women covering their head is just a Muslim custom.
Well, in the first canto of the Bhagavatam, which Srila Prabhupada wrote before he came to the West, there's one verse in which Srila Prabhupada writes about the women of Mathura, or was it Dwaraka? Women of Dwaraka. When Krishna entered, they went on the rooftops to see Krishna. They didn't mingle with the crowd. And in the purport, Srila Prabhupada talks about womenly shyness, and he speaks about the term parda, which means separation of it. It's not a Sanskrit term, it's taken from probably Persian, which means the separation and literally the veiling or the covering of women. And Srila Prabhupada says that from this we can understand that this parda was not introduced by the Muslims. It was there even when Krishna was here. So, on the principle of women not showing themselves and covering themselves or not being visible at all, as Srila Prabhupada said, is not as is sometimes suggested, something that was introduced by the Muslims. So in this regard, that's what Srila Prabhupada said. Although when we say Vedic culture, it's a very broad term. And from what I understand, Srila Prabhupada mostly applied that to the Vaishnava culture as he saw it in Bengal. And according to the Brahminical culture, in South India especially, it was the British who introduced that the lower caste or non-caste women, it was quite common they would go without any covering of any kind on the top part of their body. It was just normal. So that wasn't the part of Vedic culture that Srila Prabhupada wanted to introduce. He spoke against that, topless, bottomless.
In that connection, I read in Prabhupada's teaching in one place, I was rather surprised. He said, covering the head is for married women, for unmarried is uncovered.
Right. But of course, the girls would get married very early, also. It's a big topic. There's a lady covering her head. I caught you in the act. I shouldn't look at a woman. Traditionally, the women wouldn't be seen in such a meeting or any such meeting. There'd be a bamboo screen, and the women would be behind, they wouldn't be seen. That was until recently in India, at least at the time Bhaktisiddhanta Saraswati Thakur, that was a normal thing. The Ayurvedic doctor had to see, had to test the woman. She'd be behind a screen. They'd have the thin cotton around her wrist, and the cotton would be connected, and like that, he would take the pulse. Wouldn't see her. Times have changed. Are we allowed to go on, or we should stop? Who's the boss here? No boss here, then while the cat's away, the mice will play. Yeah, go on. Who's the boss? Krishna. Krishna Balaram.
Hare Krishna Maharaj, thank you for the beautiful discussion. Toward the very end of your discussion, you were describing Srila Prabhupada requesting us to make the Srimad Bhagavatam our life. And then you just mentioned this.
I'll just correct you on that. He didn't do it as a request. He said it, you should make Srimad Bhagavatam your life. He said it as an order.
And you used this word, which was just interesting to me, describing Srila Prabhupada as a living Bhagavata, and therefore his influence allowed for perception of Krishna consciousness. So in the context of the purport, it appeared that Ravana would see Ramchandra and Sita, but actually he did not see what we're describing this. And in the verse it's saying, perception actually requires sudhya, or Krishna consciousness. So the Bhagavatam also being a manifestation of Krishna, it seems that it would be highly presumptuous that I'm actually seeing the Bhagavatam saying without such...
Seeing what? Sorry, I
missed... Seeing what the Bhagavatam is saying without such Krishna consciousness, or to the degree I'm Krishna conscious that degree I'm able to see. So I'm wondering, because of recent history and various institutional adjustments because of the recent history, there seems to be a tendency not to underscore the reality of the necessity for living Bhagavata to help us actually gain perception of
Krishna. Yeah, that is the system, of course. Bhagavata Parogya, Bhagavata Vaishnavastani. The poet from Bengal was chastised by Surup Damodar. Very interesting incident where the associates of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu all thought this poetry is very nice, and Surup Damodar came and said, you got it all wrong. And then he told him, you go and hear Bhagavatam from a Vaishnava. Jao Bhagavata Paro Vaishnava Sthane Ekanta Ashray Karo Chaitanya Charani. And you have to take full shelter of the lotus feet of Chaitanya Mahaprabhu. Then you can understand Bhagavatam. So that's true. That's true today also. Prabhupada has given his association to us as his books. But to unlock, we still need that explained to us. Srila Prabhupada instituted this class. We could just sit and read the Bhagavatam. That's also very valuable. But we also... it's also required that we go through the parampara system and hear the Bhagavatam explained. And personal association is it makes a very great difference, no doubt. As we can see within our society, ISKCON, there are different disciples of different gurus, and we can see the different disciples, they tend to... It's quite clear how they tend to take the attitude and mood and understanding of their guru, which proves that Krishna consciousness, it's a personal system, and the personal effect is there. Therefore, we're advised to find that association and that guidance which is linked with the parampara, so that the flow comes down without obstruction or deviation. Oh, we have another question there. It's not made long enough for the ladies to ask. So what to do? And ladies aren't supposed to speak loudly in public. Then what to do? You have a long mic.
Thank you, Maharaj. As you said that to understand Krishna, we have to come out of illness. So how we can come out of this deep-rooted attachment?
Yeah, and how to come out of illness? Well, there's no real coming out of it altogether. But we come from false ego to real ego. Instead of thinking, I am the enjoyer of my body and my senses and my mind, we think, I am the servant of Krishna. That's all. For that we have to regularly hear, I am the servant of Krishna. We are all meant to surrender to Krishna. That's all. That's real I-ness. Proper sense of I-ness. I am the servant of Krishna. Soham dasoham. Vedic saying, soham, I am that. Dasoham, I am the servant. I am a servant. Hare Krishna. All glories to His Divine Grace, Srila Prabhupada. Srimad Bhagavatam Kijaya. You want to announce? Okay, go ahead.